Hello.
Oh, hello. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for joining me.
My absolute privilege. I'm just so delighted to be a very, very small part on what sounds like it's going to be a fantastic undertaking under your leadership.
Thank you. I appreciate the vote of confidence, and it's an honor to get to be in this role and talk to amazing people. I know we are both here early, but would you like some time to collect yourself? Perhaps you didn't expect me to be this early.
I am ready to go, true to sort of Barrett's form and spirit, if you will. But I understand I am early if you still need to finish up some things.
Nope, I'm ready to go.
Let's get to it then.
All right. So for the recording, I'm talking with Jamie Brooke Forseth, who kindly agreed to be recorded as we add voice and texture via these conversations to honor and learn from a few of the many wonderful people that have passed through the doors or somehow been connected to Barrett, the Honors College at Arizona State University. There are so many amazing alumni, parents, faculty, and staff, and others from whom we can learn about the foundations, development, and evolution of Barrett over the years. And I'm honored to be talking with Jamie Brooke Forseth today, as she's really an amazing and interdisciplinary human being. And because she's so interdisciplinary, I'm sure that what comes up in this conversation will resonate with a number of different kinds of students and people from different walks of life. Before we begin, are you comfortable with me calling you Jamie, or do you prefer a different address term?
Jamie is perfect. Thank you so much.
And for the recording, I'm Dr. Stephanie Delussey. My students call me Dr. D, and you can call me Stephanie or anything else you want that is in that general family of terms. So
Excellent.
I could list the four bachelor's degrees that you earned from ASU, as well as the two master's, one of which was from ASU. But so that we hear your voice as much or hopefully more than my own during our time together, would you please share your educational background in some detail and your path and when you got these degrees and what motivated them, etc.
Certainly. So I am very proud to say I have 5 degrees from Arizona State University, including a certificate from Barrett, the Honors College. I have 4 bachelor's degrees that are in music performance, specifically violin, political science, interdisciplinary studies, which focused on the Polish language and English literature. And 1 master's degree in political theory. And really, I understand on paper that they do not seem to have an organic connection, but for me, they really did unfold quite organically. I came to ASU without really a crystallized vision of what I wanted out of my collegiate experience. But I was confident that ASU and Barrett more specifically would afford me the chance to really explore a range of subjects and see where my intellectual curiosity took me. I came to ASU specifically knowing that 1 line of inquiry would be in music, in violin performance. And I also knew I wanted to supplement that with 1 more academic degree. So when I matriculated into ASU, I actually began as a violin performance and biochemical engineering major. But as expected, the path evolved. I really discovered that the engineering core coursework as a freshman conflicted and occurred at the exact same time as the core curriculum for my music degree. And so it was a little bit of a head in the heart decision there, and I went with the heart and my love of music and thought, well, let's see what else I can find across the vast ecosystem of ASU to study. Actually, it was my Barrett upperclassman mentor my freshman year who recommended an introduction to political science. And I just found the coursework, the line of inquiry that was pursued in class, the types of research that we were conducting in the papers to be so fascinating that that led to the political science degree. The Polish degree really benefited, and I'm sure as we speak together, Stephanie, we'll explore this a little. But through ASU's National Scholarship Advising Office, and I knew I wanted to apply for something, and was pointed to ASU's Critical Languages Institute, where I studied Polish and then utilized that to form an NSEP scholarship application and successfully became a grantee and then built a Polish degree around that. And then lastly, English literature. I happened to sort of realize I'd accumulated a sort of core of credits that worked toward that. And that was something I certainly loved while in high school. And so I tacked that on because it worked with a few extra large course loads for a semester or two. So it really was just, I think, the ethos of Barrett students, especially of being excited about an opportunity, being curious to delve into something, and running down the path that sort of unfolded in front of me.
Well, I wonder if you're still in touch with that upper class person who suggested the political science class, because they would be very proud of you right now.
Well, speaking to the great friendships formed while at Barrett, I am indeed. Our careers, in fact, have crossed paths in addition to our ongoing friendship. So we really never know where Barrett will take us.
It's so true. And I have had a number of Barrett students myself who were pursuing political science. And oh, I hope someday you all cross paths to each with each other, because they're amazing people as well. Now, just to be clear, you mentioned NSEP, but for those who don't know, that's the U.S. National Security Education Program. So do you want to expand on how you fit that in, that Critical Languages Institute? Because it appears to me that you left ASU for a while. Maybe it was just for a summer and studied in Poland.
Yes, so you are exactly correct of what NSEP stands for. To elaborate a little bit on that for those unfamiliar with the NSEP program, it's analogous to Fulbright, but has more of a linguistic focus to it. And another unique attribute of it is for the amount of time that you receive funding from the US government, you owe service back to the government for that amount of time. So, my NSEP grant writing really leveraged the ANSA office at ASU, where really the team there knew exactly the formula to set a student up for success. And I was the beneficiary of all of that expertise. One of the bits of guidance that I received was a successful application generally asserted the arguments of why what you are studying in your degrees tied into where you are going. So for me, Poland is a truly vibrant place, particularly for the classical violin and piano repertoire. Home of familiar names to most people, like Chopin. And so I wrote that I was going to research a female composer of the 20th century while I was there studying in Poland. And then Poznan, Poland, on the western half of the country, just coincidentally happened to have the strongest English literature and creative writing program in most of Western Europe. And so I was able to tie in that English literature component. And Poland, in its history, is absolutely fascinating from a political standpoint, both for the theories that have arguably played out as armies have marched across the country and seen the border shift, but also for the implications of what that means for the Polish identity and the significance of culture to preserving the Polish people's identity. And so I couldn't have asked for a better way of tying those in together, really leveraging everything that I was exploring at ASU and just taking that overseas for a semester to study. And as an unexpected byproduct, really getting my first taste at physically picking up and moving to the unknown and learning to live in unfamiliar cities, test out what that discomfort is like and learning that it's not too scary. People are very warm and welcoming and willing to assist and offer their help if you just ask for it. And in sort of tying together what that's helped build for me as a career foundation down the road when I subsequently had an opportunity to move abroad for work, I thought, well, I've been there, done that, let's go.
Well, that's a perfect anecdote to help support other students who are not sure if they have the confidence or courage to study overseas and to work with the Office of National Scholarship Advisement, which is at ASU in general, but it's placed in and very interlinked with Barrett because it's so many of the Barrett students that are well prepared and take advantage of these opportunities. So thank you for sharing about that. And just as a quick follow-up, what's the name of the person that you researched over there?
Great question. Her name is Grażyna Bacewicz. I actually traveled around Poland collecting books that were written about her. And some of my language practice was sitting in a little cafe every afternoon and translating texts. So I got my Polish practice while also working on my music line of inquiry for research and just those general research skills.
So, since we just touched on fear and courage a little bit, I hope you'll indulge me, but I found an old quote that you used to value. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but Eva Gerlich. And it was about fear, and it looks like it's from deep in your past, and it sounds like you've faced and overcome those kind of natural fears that we have as students, as well as just taken some interesting turns in your career. So what we didn't mention yet is that after finishing your four bachelor's degrees, can you sh share how one of those kind of was a program that led you into one of your masters and how you went on to a second master's after that, and we'll pick up after that.
Yes, so I benefited from ASU offering a 5-year joint bachelor's and master's program in political science. And so that's what Stephanie alluded to in the nice organic unfolding of those 2 degrees. I think that really was a way of taking advantage of the research I had already done and the studies that had built a nice political science foundation, but I really wanted to further explore the political theories and really utilize the expertise of some of the phenomenal professors in that department. And so it was a quick way to get another degree, I guess, under my belt. But I also, at the same time, began an internship, which sort of quickly morphed into a full-time job, working for Barbara Barrett while I finished my master's. So, true to form, I think Barrett students never are really just doing one or two things. Maybe they're doing 19 or 20 things simultaneously.
Yes, I was wondering how you fit it all in. And I was going to ask if you began working with Barbara Barrett in some sort of capacity connected with Barrett, like the internship program, or if that happened after you graduated with your bachelor's degrees.
Yeah, so I actually got that first internship that morphed into job by responding to a, quite candidly, very vague but intriguing email that was sent over the Honors Digest that I thought really sort of caught my eye, and it was addressed to Barrett seniors. And I made a note, oh, I should go ask the dean, Dean Jacobs at the time, a little bit more about what this is. But then it sort of got distracted by classes. And when I saw my post-it note reminder a little while later, I did reach out and was told, please submit a resume. And fast forward, I found myself having an interview with Barbara Barrett, namesake of the school, after graduation. So you really never know where your honors journey may take you.
And that relates to you moving overseas again and building on that experience you had in Poland, but in another country through your work with Barbara Barrett. Could you expand on that, please?
Yeah, so I, in hindsight, could not have asked for a more empowering launch pad to my career that had the benefit of building on a phenomenal foundation that I built at Barrett. Barbara was a very empowering boss and mentor. She always gave me runway to see what I could do, what research I could find, what ideas I might come up with. And if I was willing to put the elbow grease in and do the work, she was willing to see what might be the result. And I think that's really a treat to have had, not only as a career experience, but particularly early on in my career. I think one thing that I really internalized in that first role, which took us, as you did allude to Stephanie, to work together at the U.S. Embassy in Helsinki, Finland, where Barbara served as the U.S. ambassador to Finland. I really learned through watching her put into practice that just because something is the status quo doesn't mean that's how we have to accept it. If something had not been done, that doesn't mean that it couldn't be done. If something was hard, that wasn't a reason to rule it out. And I think one thing that's really sort of springs to mind in terms of sharing maybe a little bit of an anecdote about working with her in Finland relates to that early period when we were settling in. Her term began shortly before summer. And in Finland, Finns really depart Helsinki, the capital, for July. And so she was asking, well, if why am I going to be in Helsinki when the people I am supposed to be building relationships with, advocating on behalf of the United States, building partnerships with, aren't here? And so we designed a biking expedition from the Swedish-Finnish border to the Finnish-Russian border. and set it up as sort of a two-pronged expedition. During the day was business. And so along the route, we stopped during the day and met with business leaders, schools, universities, phenomenal tech hubs, libraries, even cultural institutions, and saw where can we partner with the United States? Maybe there's an organization or company that there's a natural synergy there, but that introduction maybe hasn't been facilitated yet. And we often heard Finn's remark, you know, a US ambassador has never come here before. And so I think just showing up, demonstrating Americans are very approachable, did a lot for public diplomacy. And then every day at 5 p.m. thereabouts, we'd hop on our bikes and bike roughly till midnight because the sun didn't set that high north, close to the Arctic Circle. And I think it always has really resonated with me quite profoundly to see the impact of a US ambassador hopping off a bike and introducing herself to some Finns that might be gardening in their front lawn or playing with their kids in the evening. And I think demonstrating that accessibility, that engagement, the willingness to create opportunities for paths to cross and for dialogue to happen, has been a framework that I always continue to seek out applications of. It was not necessarily a moment where anybody said, "Here is a teachable moment, make sure you observe." But it was something that I think was so special about working with Barbara, of thinking about ways to create solutions that haven't been encountered, that maybe sort of push the envelope and expand the impact of the audience that's either having that engagement or broadening the awareness of whatever the topic or initiative may be.
So it sounds like it was a formative experience, whether there was direct mentoring or indirect mentoring. You got a lot out of being in Barbara Barrett's sphere, and sounds like you got some good exercise as well.
That's true. That's true.
And we haven't mentioned this, and it didn't necessarily seem to connect a lot with Barrett, but I think it's still going to inspire and add texture here that you had a background in ballet, which gave you some of that physical stamina that apparently one would need to be serving with Barbara Barrett in Finland. And I saw you'd also climbed Mount Everest. Is that accurate?
There's a nuance to that, Stephanie. I did an endurance hiking challenge where you are challenged to climb a mountain over and over in 36 hours or less to accumulate the vertical height of Mount
Ah,
Everest,
okay.
29,029 feet. So I have full respect of those who have successfully summited Mount Everest itself. I did a slightly less daunting version for those successful mountaineers, but was quite challenging for me.
Oh, yeah, it's certainly an impressive feat. And, circling back to having, this fitness and the balance and the accessibility that you just talked about, when you were pursuing your undergraduate degrees, do you feel like you struck a balance at that time? Were you working, or were you involved in clubs, or were given the 4 degrees, were you mainly focused on academics?
That's a great question. I actually really think that both the ASU ecosystem, where really anything is possible in terms of what you want to study, combined with the infectious nature of the Barrett community. You can't help but have inspiring opportunities bump into you, even if you're trying to put your head down and just study. That I did have to learn that balance. And it wasn't necessarily a balance in terms of time, but it was really about thinking about the organization of things. I would say, sort of in the line vein of what we were just speaking about, the 29029 Everesting Challenge, Barrett really set me up with the foundation for something like that in learning to break down a big, daunting task into bite-sized pieces. I think in hindsight, I never really thought about, oh my goodness, if I'm going to try to do 4 bachelor's degrees in 4 years, how overwhelming the number of classes is that I'm going to have to complete. Instead, it was really just, okay, for this semester, what do I need to target? Okay, for this week, within those classes, what needs to get done? And then thinking about just breaking it down into those very digestible bites, sort of made it not daunting, made it very approachable, and actually created space for it to be both fun and enjoyable. And so I almost think that by nature of being so inspired by so many things that I could do. We've really touched just on the classes so far, but obviously there are clubs and organizations and so many other things that create that well-rounded student experience at Barrett. It was a way of just learning that framework of fitting it all in, and making it enjoyable along the way.
You lived in the Barrett community as well, correct?
I did, yes.
Can you tell me more about what that was like in general and some specifics? Because if I have my dates correct, you were at Barrett before we had our new building.
That's correct. Yes. So most broadly, I think something that is very special about Barrett within ASU is I like to tell prospective students to Barrett that if you really want a vast, vivacious, another vibrant research university, ASU is the school for you. If you want a curated liberal arts curriculum in a more approachably sized community, Barrett is the college for you. And you can have the best of those two fairly disparate worlds while at one institution. So why not take advantage of that? The upside of it was that Barrett really was a bit of a home base for me. As I said, I always thought of it as infectious. It was honestly sort of hard to stay still. Action was sort of inevitable. There was always activity, there was always movement. I did live in the older Barrett community, as you said, Stephanie. My first year, I lived in Best C. My second year, I thought I was tickled pink when I found out I was to live in what was the newer dorms of Hayden East and Hayden West. And then there was this dusty courtyard in the center where you sort of pass through between classes or to meet friends. We didn't have a lot of food options. The Memorial Union, was probably the closest place. And so being scrappy about scraps, was a bit of a bonding experience. I think, the The dorms were maybe a little more rough and tumble, but I think it was great because it wasn't such a cushy oasis that you didn't want to leave your room. It really almost was a forcing function to get you out of your room and interact with students and faculty and professors. I imagine if I traveled back in time, I could have offered some constructive criticism on living in the old community. But now that's sort of washed away, and all of the phenomenal highlights are all that's remaining.
Have you been back to the campus and seen the new community, and what are your thoughts about it?
I have. The first time I stepped into the new honors complex was surf and turf night. I was blown away. It felt like there were parts of the dining hall that were Harry Potter-esque with the banners hanging from the ceiling. But what was unchanged, even though the walls and sort of the accoutrement of everything were perhaps more refined, was the consistency of the energy and engagement of students. And so that's what told me I'm back at Barrett.
So, what do you remember? You mentioned a few minutes ago about teachers, professors, all the different people you could visit when you were outside your dorm room. What do you remember about the human event and the people you met there, your professors, if it helped you in your other courses or in your career and life?
Yeah, the human event, I think, is a special gem that every Barrett graduate treasures. My second semester of human event, Professor Lenore Brady, was the teacher, and she just had this special gift of making a text come alive through the discussion, but also making it applicable to life as a student that sometimes was very disparate from the life of the characters or the writers of the piece we were reading. I think one piece that continues to resonate in my both professional and personal life from the human event is the skill of civil discourse, learning to read, articulate an idea. And sometimes, even if we felt very strongly about a personal interpretation of a text, learning to have that dynamic but still courteous discussion with our classmates, to explore and understand the nuances of our respective interpretations and where we were coming from in forming sort of that interpretation or thesis. I think something that's also special about the way the human event seminar is taught is that it's small. There's no place to hide if you didn't do the reading, it would show. And in contrast, sometimes to larger courses on campus, there was really a sense of accountability that formed with your peers. And I think that was very unique and reflects what a treasured culture Barrett fosters.
It's been there since the beginning, and I think it's a key piece to building community and a springboard for, as you said, polite civil discourse. Did you get to meet Ted Humphrey then?
I did have the privilege. I was there as the transition sort of happened. So the first dean that I ever had was Dean Jacobs, but Dean Humphrey certainly still had a presence. His wife Janet sort of led the ONSA office, which we talked about. And I think that the care that the deanship sort of passed dean to dean that was shown by the continued engagement of the predecessor, while also creating space for Dean Jacobs upon his arrival to continue growing Barrett into what it's become today. And I know Dean Williams continues to take it into further flourishing levels, is special as the leadership of the college and also a great sort of leadership by example for students like me to see how that transfer benefits into posterity, the institution.
So you mentioned that you, I guess my question is, when you were in high school, did you consider any other universities? And whether you did or not, when you decided about ASU, did you already know about Barrett, or how did you find your way to Barrett?
Okay, so the first question, I did apply to a few other universities. As I shared, I knew that music performance was something that was important to me, for college. So really my curation of schools to which I applied revolved around what was the violin performance, and then specific for the music disciplines was what professors maybe have spots available for the year I was matriculating into college. I think one thing that I was cognizant of coming into undergraduate studies was that I was fairly confident I wanted to do some sort of graduate studies. Whether it was immediately after graduation or down the road, that was something that was on my radar. And so thinking about affordability was something that I was mindful of. ASU, when I entered, was offered not only phenomenal education, but at a relatively affordable price point for the quality of education. And really phenomenal scholarships. So that was certainly something that I was mindful of. And then the reputation of Barrett, having that smaller community. At the time, I think it was the smaller community that was most on my radar. I liked knowing that there was a starting point for meeting people and navigating ASU, which can be very large and daunting of where do you begin? And so that certainly was something that drew me to thinking, I think this will be a place that I can be successful, I can learn, and set myself up or a career, whatever that may be.
So, following up on a couple different threads, since you just mentioned the violin performance again and your career, whatever it might be, going in a very different direction. I mean, perhaps there was a younger version of you that thought she would grow up to be a violin performer. I don't know if that's true or not, but could you share some of the places and notable people with whom you actually have got to still fulfill some part of that violin side of you, despite your career taking a very different turn?
Yes, this is one of my favorite things to talk about. I did actually know, even while beginning my studies, that I was not going to make a career out of performance. I always felt strongly that I could find fulfillment and enjoyment in doing other pursuits. Well, there are some people that only can find enjoyment and fulfillment from pursuing an art. And so I didn't want to detract from an already very finite set of seats, if you will.
Okay.
But I did know that I wanted to remain engaged for the rest of my life. I now call myself a full-time audience member rather than a full-time musician. I think this year so far, I've at 38 performances so far this year, so I feel like I'm
Wow.
fulfilling that goal.
That's wonderful.
It really is, Stephanie, it really is. But you know, there are ways that music has intertwined itself, even in the most unexpected ways. While working at the US Embassy, we hosted an evening of the female ambassadors to Finland. And the one of the ambassadors there happened to be the ambassador from Poland. And so I was able to talk to her about my undergraduate honors thesis on Grażyna Bacewicz. And she was just lit up when she found out someone actually knew who this was, really outside of Poland, and was excited to talk about her music and contribution to culture in the country. I've found that I have brought colleagues over time to performances as a way of let's do something a little different in terms of some bonding time after work. I found really that attending performances is a little bit of a retreat. It's one of the few sacrosanct places in the 21st century where you still put away your phone and you're not looking at it during the performance. And sometimes I'm able to sit there and really be immersed in the artistic performance on stage. And sometimes I actually problem solve issues from work. And just that gear that was stuck is released. And it's a productive performance. And so I think it's something that's very, very special. It's something that I treasure in my life. My last little tidbit I'll share with you, Stephanie, because it has an ASU connection. In 2021, I had finished a job that took me to Washington, D.C. It was still pretty limited in terms of engagement because of COVID-19 at the time. And while I was figuring out what I wanted to do next with my career, I said, well, I have no excuses now. It's time to get the cobwebs out of my fingers and do some violin practicing. And I happened to know that one of my ASU classmates was living in Baltimore, well, Maryland, while I lived in Arlington, Virginia. And so I reached out and said, you know, we've always brainstormed doing some playing together. I play violin, he played bassoon. He'd actually found some repertoire specifically composed for that somewhat obscure ensemble. And so we formed a duo and started performing as the Arling Moore Quartet or duo. And so that was a way where my ASU network brought me back together. And music brought me back together. And that was really great fun. And a way to continue playing at the same time.
I love that story. And didn't you get to solo for the president at some point? And which president was that?
Yes, I've had the privilege of playing for President Bush, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, and at the time, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. So
Wow.
those are three moments that I certainly treasure a great, great deal. Growing up in Arizona, Justice O'Connor was a little bit of a personal hero. I think I prepared my Barrett and ASU writing chops in high school, doing National History Day and writing on Justice O'Connor. So having the opportunity to play for her was really cherry on top of a lifetime.
Very nice. You mentioned a moment ago about being in a gap or a transition in your career. And I did want to learn more about when you left Helsinki and maybe pivoted towards what is a different direction, though I'm sure there's a Venn diagram overlap in terms of the global thought and perspective involved, but you pivoted towards finance, and I'm not sure that that would have been predicted from your educational background, though you haven't told us yet about your Yale master's.
Yes. So I think as a parallel to what was a natural organic unfolding of my ASU degrees, the various chapters of my career have had a similar organic unfolding. After working with Ambassador Barrett in Finland, I did work for her a few more years back in the US, and then went to business school at Yale for an MBA, in part because one thing that I was observing was a common theme when something maybe wasn't perfectly executed. There tended to be a theme of finance to it. And I did not speak the language of balance sheets and income statements to be proactive about anticipating and addressing those issues. So I thought, well, if I go to business school, I'll add that tool to my toolbox. I did go to business school with a very open mind about what my postgraduate career might look like. With one exception, I did not want to do finance. And it turned out, in the vein of, practicing what I learned while at Barrett, you never know where luck will strike you, but put yourself in spots where luck can strike you. I attended a presentation, one lunch that I had free by an alum of the university, and all of the top finance students were there, and they were asking questions that I did not understand. But I did understand one of the topics the speaker addressed, which was the evolution of legislation being passed in Congress, shaping the world of finance after the great financial crisis. That I understood. And so I went up afterwards, gave him my 20-second spiel about why I was in business school to learn finance. I confessed I did not understand what a trading floor did, despite my classes about efficient capital markets. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I found his remarks about legislation in Congress insightful and shared a little of my background in that and asked if I could invite myself to come see a trading floor. Little did I know that one does not normally invite yourself to a trading floor, which he promptly informed me, and then said, "Why do you think you can just invite yourself?" And I said, "Well, I figure the worst you're going to tell me is no, and I'll be no worse off than I am now." And he commented, "Good risk management analysis," and took my business card. So fast forward, I thought I was spending an afternoon seeing a trading floor. It turned out I spent the afternoon interviewing across the trading floor. And at the end of the day, was really privileged to be offered an opportunity to intern there during my MBA internship summer. So I rotated through fixed income which would be trading debt of companies, municipalities, and really found my home in municipal finance, which is public financing in the United States. So if you think about a bond, a ballot initiative that maybe asks you to vote on raising property taxes to build a new school in a community or fund new public safety or roads or sewers, I often describe it as municipal finance works on things you don't pay attention to until they break. And then they really impact your life. So I was invited to work on the municipal bond trading desk. And the rest is sort of history in terms of that next chapter. The environment was the opposite of diplomacy, but it was extremely fast-paced. I liked at the end of the day, you really knew if you made a good decision or a poor decision because there was a scorecard on the trading desks. Balance sheet there of positions, and found my little niche.
Thank you for explaining that. I'm sure it will be fascinating to students who think they're going to be in the same kind of career forever, but in fact, we can have career shifts and marry a lot of different jobs within a given career. And I think one of the ones that we skipped over between Helsinki and what you just described is when you were the director of global strategy and senior advisor to the 25th Secretary of the Air Force, which was Barbara Barrett. That's that few years you talked about. How was that different, or what did you learn? I mean, I do have students who are interested in military kinds of connections. So you've had diplomacy, you've got a little military connection, you've got finance. That's that interdisciplinarity that's interesting.
Yes, so I worked in two roles in finance, and during that time, stayed in touch with Ambassador Barrett. I did have the privilege when she asked if I would come and work for her a second time on her team when she became Secretary of the Air Force, which required me to move to DC to work at the Pentagon. It was a little bit of a vote of confidence from a mentor that I highly respect to be invited to something like that. It was also a bit of a challenge for me to see, can I navigate a completely new, quite foreign, extraordinarily large organization? And can I pivot to get up to speed quickly on national security topics that I previously was not delving into day to day? It also turned out that my time in the role was as COVID-19 sort of began unleashing upon the world. And so not only was I learning new processes and procedures and people and insignia on uniforms, but all of the processes and procedures were in flux at the time. I did approach it though with the attitude of there's only upside from this. I get an opportunity to serve my country and give back a little bit. And I also get to learn from literally battle-tested leaders. So it was a bit of a pinch-me moment to have such a phenomenal opportunity. I think one thing, Stephanie, as you mentioned, and maybe tying it in back for to ASU and Barrett, I think a lot of the way that I've approached my career was built on the foundations of my experience as a student. I think I learned to take initiative to design the education that I wanted. I sort of followed my nose when I heard about an interesting tech class or opportunity on campus. And that's really sort of followed me into how I've built my professional career of follow interesting, talented leaders, and unique opportunities, like what took me to the Pentagon. I think in the vein of thinking about the Pentagon, which at its height generally has 25,000 people working within it, or the Department of the Air Force with thousands and thousands of not only people in uniform, but also their families that are part of that experience of serving the country. I got my toes wet navigating ASU because at the time ASU was very vast for me. There were a plethora of courses and degrees, the same as the Pentagon had a plethora of new topics and people to meet and understand what their role was and how things got done and who needed what when. I think learning to reach out to professors for mentorship and advice while I was a student helped sort of narrow the aperture of choices that I had and made it feel a bit less overwhelming. And that's really a skill I continue to utilize. The onus is on me to identify the menu of options that I'm considering and maybe make a recommendation or two, but then seeking out the insights of colleagues and mentors to fine-tune that decision. I don't think I realized that in the moment while a student, but I was getting to practice that. I think one of my overall just favorite things when talking to students is the varied environments teaching you those skills, even when you don't realize it. And I think that's one of the phenomenal gifts of that vast ecosystem of ASU with that more curated, manageably sized community of Barrett, that you get to learn the lessons of those two very disparately sized organizations.
You've mentioned that you talk to students. In what context does that happen? And tell us more about your engagement with student success.
Well, I always find the freshness of students to be motivating. So it's always such a joy to have a chance to interact with them. I've had the privilege of friends and colleagues when they have kids or family extended family members thinking about making a choice of college. And they say, we're thinking about Barrett. We hear it has a phenomenal reputation. Can you talk to them about what it's like? And so that's certainly one natural venue that often happens. I do like visiting campus, and speaking with students. I had an opportunity a couple years ago on Parents Welcome Weekend to see not only students, but also their friends and family that were supporting them. And it is just very, very fulfilling to see the growth of the school while sustaining such a high caliber of students. I think something that really resonates with me is the ASU mission of measuring success not by who we exclude, but by who we include if they meet the requirements of to gain admission to ASU. I think that's a very empowering mission that's really resonates through the university fabric. And so where I can, it's a really delight to support that.
Maybe I'm mistaken, but did you have a hand in helping create Barrett's Student Success Center?
I did not have a hand in creating that, but I certainly, when I heard about the idea, thought it was phenomenal and was an eager advocate of it. I think that continuing to bolster the already phenomenal range of resources for students that faculty and staff provide, sort of just reflects a bit of what Barrett is, of never sort of resting on laurels of all that's already been accomplished, but constantly thinking about how can we continue to innovate and refine what we're offering for students to set them up for success, not just to continually advance Barrett, but also in recognition of the career environment evolving and therefore needing to adapt to ensure students year to year are equally well set up with for that evolving career dynamic.
So, one more question, unless something organically pops up. You mentioned your thesis that seems to have come from the Critical Language Institute experience that you had about a Polish composer. What was your thesis experience like, besides the fact that that gave you a connection with that Polish ambassador years later? Tell us about your thesis experience and what you learned from it then, or maybe how it helped support you for future endeavors.
Ooh, that's a fun question, Stephanie. So my thesis, I wrote the written thesis and supplemented the delivery of my honors thesis with a recital featuring the music of Grażyna Bacewicz. So one, I think thinking about delivering things in multiple formats is something that is always maybe percolating in the back of my mind. Professionally, that's maybe more of how do different audiences digest the information I wish to convey. But that's probably has, its roots in the framework of presenting the my written research, giving a lecture about it to the audience, and then doing the recital as the second half. That research project was perhaps one of the most daunting that I had undertaken because there was no shortcut to translating the material. There really was n very, very limited information in English for me to rely on. So I had to complete step one of translating before I could do step two of the analyzing and synthesizing and building the analysis. I have not ever really encountered that to quite such a literal translation degree subsequently, but now that I've done it the hard way, everything is easier. I think also, again, sort of tying in a topic we've touched on of just doing so many things while a student. I don't think I've changed that working professionally. And so figuring out how to do research effectively has been something I continue to rely on. I arguably solidified my full-time job offer out of that internship on the trading floor we talked about because of research. I was given what I subsequently learned was deemed a fairly difficult task of finding out an obscure, trying to figure out an obscure answer to whether, if credit default swaps existed in 1975, would New York City have been considered to have defaulted on its debt? And like a good Barrett student, I went about researching and found that one of the New York universities fortuitously had scanned all the historic documentation related to that point in time, and so went to work digging through primary source material, building timelines, laying out a thesis, and studying, okay, what are the requirements of a default and what happened in history, and putting it together. It could have been an honors topic that I might have done if I had been in business school, W.P. Carey at ASU while a student. And so that was just a, not even, a, I don't think I thought too much about it. It was just a creature of habit of you given a question, go do the research and put together a paper on it. And I think being able to do that in just a week or two during that internship sort of helped me get my foot in the door professionally for what's turned out to be the core of my career.
That's an inspiring story. I want to be respectful of your time, so we'll wrap up now, but I must admit, I'm curious if you see anything changing in your future, if you think you're going to pivot again, or let me put it this way. I hope we can visit again someday if you do pivot again, because there will be interesting lessons to pull from that. But we've had a great visit, but I want to make sure if there's anything else you'd like to bring up that I didn't ask about or think to include.
Stephanie, you led such an organic, easy conversation. And thank you also in advance for just some of the brainstorming topics, because I've been noodling on that, as I like to say. It took me a moment to remember Hayden East and Hayden West. I was like, it was Hayden one, Hayden two. So thank you for letting me get the cobwebs out of my brain there. I think there's one maybe topic that we didn't touch on too directly, if you have a moment, is one of the advantages of the honors coursework in sort of bridging the gap between Barrett and ASU, because it really is an organic, that seems to be my word of this conversation. It's a very natural way of approaching a professor and saying, you know, I've been sitting in the back of the auditorium. I found the subject matter to be very exciting. I'd like to delve into it a bit deeper. Can I make this an honors course and do some supplementary work? So one, I think it connects that line of inquiry, research for students or whatever they might do, extra lab work at the biosciences building, or maybe help the professor with their own research. But I think that bridging that gap between the two sort of institutions and not keeping them so siloed, but facilitating synergies between them. And I think it's a way to start building that professional network really early on, regardless of whether students are continuing on immediately to graduate program or professional school or going immediately out into a career field. They have that letter of recommendation they may need because they've worked really closely with the professor. You never know where that connection might be useful down the road, where you now have graduated from the university and can reach out to a professor in a professional context. And so that was one thing I didn't touch upon, but really has been very, I think, a value add to my Barrett experience and what I was able to get out of ASU more broadly because of some of that honors coursework I did.
I'm so glad you brought it up. It's really a symbiotic relationship. You just highlighted the benefit that can come to students from starting that network early by having an extra reason or a platform from which to approach faculty and work together. But it's also the case that the faculty really benefit from the Barrett students. So the larger ASU faculty express in a variety of different ways over the years that the Barrett students bring an energy and a gravity to any class that they're in. And even though it may also be extra work for them to do an honors enrichment contract with the student, it's a two-way street. They do get benefit from it, and it's the Barrett students, not exclusively, but are often the ones that do wind up becoming their assistants or working in their labs. And without Barrett, ASU wouldn't be the same place that it is. It's really a match made in heaven to some degree.
I love that. I 1000% agree, a match made in heaven for sure.
Well, I want to thank you again for taking the time to visit with me today and willing to be recorded and inspire people with who knows what, who will hear these things. Just like you said, it's hard to know what the ripples will be. And I just am very grateful for the time you took today, and it's been a delight to visit with you.
It's been my privilege. Thank you so much, Stephanie. And if you need anything subsequently from me, please just reach out and I will do my best to provide what you need.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye, Stephanie.